This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, who invites you to give the gift of membership this holiday season. Purchase a membership gift card with promo code GIFTIPA, that's G-I-F-T-I-P-A, and receive a free copy of Dick Cantwell's book, Brewing Eclectic IPA, Pushing the Boundaries of India Pale Ale. Visit homebrewersassociation.org today for details. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 14th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Basic Brewing alumnus Mark Smith returns to talk about his new brewery in Rogers, Arkansas, Natural State Beer Company. Mark and I sit down with head brewer Will Sonneman to talk about their plans to bring lager-focused beers to Northwest Arkansas. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. This Friday, financial supporters will get an early release of the next Basic Brewing video episode featuring my big and tasty Belgian dark strong ale. And I cook up a surprise for Steve Wilkes, food-related, in preparation for Thanksgiving. I'm getting submissions for our annual Brewing Disaster Show. Steve and I will probably get together in early December to read those stories for the show. So get your stories of brewing gone wrong in while you're thinking about it. I had sort of a disaster this week that's not beer-related, but it is fermentation-related. You may remember I posted a pic on Instagram and talked about it here when I started fermenting peppers for hot sauce on Halloween. I put habaneros, atomic starfish, ghost peppers, and Carolina Reapers into a brine with carrots, onion, and garlic. And I did that on Halloween. And those ingredients were based on a cooked hot sauce recipe that I've made many times and love from our friend Ed Nicholson. Well, the fermentation seemed to go really well. There was activity within a few days, lots of bubbles coming up through the peppers. And after about 12 days, it stopped. So I blended the vegetables up, added some lime juice and a little bit of the brine, and what I came up with was something with a ton of heat that tasted a lot like raw onion and garlic. So it was not what I was expecting, not by my best effort by far. So I'm planning to try to salvage the sauce by simmering it to get that raw character tamed a bit. And I know I'll be killing off the probiotics from the fermentation, but, you know, the probiotics aren't getting into me with the stuff tasting the way it does. So, you know, I'll have more details of the disaster part in our annual disaster show, because there was some other stuff going along at the same time. But I just wanted to let you know that the fermented hot sauce is still a work in progress. I just wanted to bring you up to speed. Let's hear a word from our friends and sponsors at Tavor. Tavor is a way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered to you. It's not a beer of the month club, which I've done in the past, where someone chooses beer for you. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com. That's T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com. And download their iPhone or Android app, and you'll receive notifications for two new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, look for selections from Little Beast, True Respite, Mumford, Mars, Imagination, Two Toms, and Indeed. If you're not interested in the beers you see, no worries. Just skip the ones you don't want. However, when you do see something that you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click on it and add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. So, why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, just go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app. And when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, all one word. Don't forget to do that. And you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. So I'm giving you $10. Again, it's free to sign up, and there is no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. And many thanks to the folks at Tavor for being recurring sponsors to the show. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Rob from Tampa, Florida writes, in the spirit of Alton Brown, where he readdressed some older episodes in Good Eats Reloaded, are there any nuggets of wisdom that you may have espoused in your earlier episodes that you may have changed your mind about? Are there any episodes that I might be better off skipping entirely? For example, there was an episode about brewing software, and as I heard you mention Palm OS and BlackBerry, it was a stark reminder that these episodes were recorded over a decade ago, and likely the information might not be all that helpful. Well, thanks, Rob. To be honest, there's a ton of stuff since July of 2005 that we've talked about on this show that, you know, we don't follow now. And not lots of new stuff that's come up since then, like no chill beers, no boil beers, electric brewing, brew in a bag, wort souring, post-boil hopping. You know, all these things would have just blown our minds to us in the beginning. And I'm sure all along the timeline, we've told listeners to do this and not to do that when the advice is based on techniques that were, you know, obsolete and or unnecessary, it turns out. But, however, having said all that, if you're going to go through the archives, there's one thing that you're getting that's hard to quantify, and that's context. You know, we've talked to about a lot of things over the years. We've tasted a lot of things over the years. We've talked to people over the years. Some of them, unfortunately, are no longer with us. And as they say, you know, it's hard to know how far you've come unless you know where you've been. Listening to all of our archives, you know, goof-ups included, bad advice included over the years, and good advice and successes. It can give you some good perspective on how quickly the hobby and brewing in general has progressed. And things that we take for granted nowadays, you know, were once upon a time novel and groundbreaking. So there's one piece of advice, though, when you're listening to the archives. Stay current with the most recent episodes, too. While you're delving into the past, be sure to listen to the new stuff. This, by my calculations, is episode 674. And if you just start at the beginning and listen all the way through, it's going to take you a long time to time travel up to current days. So if you're listening to the archives, I'm flattered that you care enough to do so. I hope you're enjoying all the awesome conversations with all the talented people that we've had the pleasure of meeting over the past 15 years. So be sure to keep up with us old guys in the future as well. Speaking of the future of homebrewing is going electric. And our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa, have been making electric brewing systems for more than a decade. And we're finally catching up. And when brewing systems are powered with a banana peel and a Mr. Fusion, I'm sure they'll be the first adopters. In the meantime, Warthog systems and controllers from highgravitybrew.com are game changers over propane. Or propane, as we say. I've had a Warthog brew in a bag system for years, and I love it. I'll never go back, especially in cold weather where I can hold rock-steady mash rest tips, do step mashes, precisely control the vigor of my boil, all while never worrying about the propane tank going empty or the wind blowing out my flame, which both of those have happened when I was using propane. I've also used my Warthog system as a sous vide to do high-temperature fermentations and wort souring. Whether you're looking for a single, two, or three-vessel systems from 5 gallons to 2 barrels, highgravitybrew.com is the place for you. And they're good folks, too. They also carry electric gear from other manufacturers. It's a brewing season now. It's a brewing season. The holidays are coming up, and it's time to take the pain out of propane with an electric setup from highgravitybrew.com. And if you use the promo code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your high-gravity electric gear purchase. That's at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, if you're a fan of the archives, you'll recognize Mark Smith. He's been on the audio side and the video side. He's an award-winning home brewer, and he's now stepping into the professional world with his Natural State Beer Company. The official opening is Saturday, November 23rd, but I drove up to Rogers, Arkansas a few days back to get a sneak peek. Well, Mark Smith, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, great to be back. It's been a while. I'm trying to remember how many years. It's maybe 10?
Has it? What?
No. Maybe 10. Maybe 8 years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Mark has been on the show several times, and we've had a video podcast at your house with your home brewery at that time, and we went to Kansas City together with the Flops Group and toured Boulevard Brewing Company, and you hooked us up with Matt from Firestone Walker. Does your brother still work for Firestone Walker?
He recently left after being there for almost 12 years, I think it was. He decided he wanted to try something a little different, so he moved on. But I missed that contact, and he's been really instrumental in helping us set up the brewery in terms of marketing and social media.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, where are we and who are we sitting with here?
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you're at Natural State Beer Company in Rogers, Arkansas. We're in the Village on the Creeks in Rogers, if you're familiar with that area, right along the Razorback Greenway here, so the bike riders can see us. And we're sitting here with William Sonneman. He's our head brewer. And, we're just hanging out here, enjoying the view, watching people go by on the bike path. So
Twilight Beer.
Well, welcome. Do you go by Will?
Just Will, yep.
All right. Well, I've got a son named Will as well, so it should be easy for me to remember at this age.
Good.
So
he's got a son named Will as well, and he likes to call me William.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's, well, that doesn't it's not working out.
He thinks he's in trouble is the problem when I call him William.
So what are the roles here, Mark? You are the owner and founder. What's going on here?
Well, that's, I guess I'm the president right now and one of the owners. William's the head brewer. We've got a tap room manager, Dara Martin, who's on staff with us too. And then we've got a few other servers that we've just brought on staff. We're getting close to our grand opening here and some soft openings. So we're needing to get those folks on staff and all trained up. But I've got a partner, Dan Klaus, who is home brewer as well, and a co-founder, and then I've got a financial partner in my great uncle Steve, that rich uncle.
He gets greater all the time, right?
Yes, exactly. But yeah, that's kind of the roles that we have here, and we're just excited to get going. Get people tasting our beers, and we've been on social media for 2 years promoting.
1,000 Instagram followers.
Yeah.
Wow. That bunch before you poured officially poured a single beer.
We're not even. Yeah. Right.
We hope we live up to the hype. But we've got a lot of people really interested in us, and we're really excited to be a part of the brewing community in Northwest Arkansas.
Let's talk about the structure that we're in. This you got to build this building from scratch.
Yes, sir.
And that's kind of your wheelhouse, right? I mean, you are an engineer by trade, as well as being a home brewer. What was it like working on your own project?
It was pretty surreal. It really was. I mean, being able to kind of build from scratch what I think is the ideal It's kind of small batch brewery and tap room. Our company, Tatum Smith Engineers, did do the structural engineering on this, and we partnered with Core Architects and several other people that we work with all the time on the engineering side of things to make this building happen. HP Engineering for mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, which is a huge part of any brewing project, of course. Mm-hmm. Crossland built the building, and Crossland Construction, and these are folks I deal with on a day-to-day basis in my day job. So, you know, being able to cross that into the home brewing and pro brewing side of things was really special. There's a lot of synergy, I guess you'd say, with all those different trades and the people that I know to make this happen. And this is a lot of people that really wanted to, you know, help bend over backwards to make this project happen for us here.
So what kind of research did you go through to get to where you are? And how did that lead you to the system that you've got?
Mm, that's good. Good question.
That's what I do, Mark.
Yeah. Well, I drank a lot of beer. we toured a lot of facilities. Will and I and Dan and you and I have toured back in Bullard so literally for decades, going through and just taking note of what different breweries had done over the course of that time and just making little mental notes on what I'd like to do, what I'd do differently, that's brilliant. We need to incorporate that in our tap room or brewery. But as a home brewer, going way back, I started brewing in 2003. Back then, I read every book I could find on home brewing. I listened to this podcast called Basic Brewing Radio. Maybe you're familiar with it.
And despite that,
it turned out well. No, I mean, I listened to almost every episode of the first probably 10 years that you did, and that really helped out a lot. But yeah, just researching with the books that were available back then, and then just doing probably 20 or 30 batches of beer a year, just constantly tweaking recipes and trying to figure out what I liked and what other people liked, and it's just all kind of come together through years and years of practice of just doing it, so 15, 16 years of home brewing. 250 batches of beer roughly over that period of time. And that's kind of really got me to where I'm at with the lagers, and what we're trying to do here is focusing on the lagers. Is those are just the beers I just kind of fell in love with after going through all the different ales that I could possibly brew. The IPA, my IPA years, they were long years. There were many, many IPAs I went through. There were some great times, some great years. And I'm kind of getting back into some of these milkshake IPAs. That's an interesting thing. Although we probably won't be producing those here. There's a lot of places that do some really good milkshake IPAs, but not us.
So is the Reinheitsgebot in effect here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, along with Gemütlichkeit and everything else that you want to sell, those funny German words. Yeah, our core recipes will be the core four for the Reinheitsgebot. Your water, your malt, hops, and yeast. We definitely were going to focus on those. We're not going to let it handcuff us, though. We will get away from that at some point. We may do a beer that has, peppers or fruit in it, but it'd be a very limited batch type series. We really want to focus on, those four main ingredients. And you can do a lot with those four main ingredients. I mean, we've all tasted some beers that you swore up and down had fruit in them, but it was just the hops. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really want to try to do, is just explore those four and create some unique flavors.
And we'll talk about the system. Is this a dream system that you've got going on here?
Oh yeah, it's a brand new 7-barrel system. It's very manual. It doesn't have a lot of the bells and whistles and the pneumatic valves and the automatic systems that some of the other newer brewers are dealing with. But it's nice in that sense, because it gives the brewer that technique. It involves your hands. It involves you, climbing up and down the steps a few times to make sure that the water's at the right temperature, things like that. So it's great, and it's really responsive. It's beautifully shiny and well put together. But it gives me the ability to put in a little nuance here and there, and so it's great. It's been great so far.
And y'all were showing off the three. I guess they work in tandem, on-demand hot water system, so there's no hot liquor tank.
Yeah, yeah. Having as much pasteurization temp water as you can handle is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a tool, and yeah, it's great. It's great back there so far.
So could you theoretically sanitize or clean in place with the hot water coming out of the wall?
Yeah. So you can use either chemical, you know, really abrasive chemicals, or in some situations for our transfer lines and things like that, because we have all the hot water that we could ever want, we can get away from using parasitic acid, is what a lot of brewers are using, and for certain sanitization and just sanitizing things, it's a lot easier. Yeah.
And talk, where do you come from? What's your background, and how'd you meet up with this guy?
I am from the East Coast. My wife and I moved here from Northern Virginia. I was born and raised in Maryland, and we were just looking for a fresh start, and we found Northwest Arkansas, and we love everything about this, you know, beautiful green place on the earth. And obviously you guys have this fantastic blossoming beer scene. Mm-hmm. When I was first thinking about moving out here, it was like a dozen breweries, and now I think we're 15, 16 plus, including ourselves. We've got craft cider, we've got a new craft distillery in town, and so for me and for what I do for a living, I mean, it was a fantastic way to get out of the DC area and come to a new place that still has plenty to offer.
So we've got a short flight in front of us because you're still cranking up, but so what's this beer here, Mark?
That is our darker offering, the Schwartz beer. Restrained roastiness, clean finishing, dry lager, and this is our very first beer we did on this batch, on this system, very first guile, and it has turned out really, really well. We've been very pleased with it. I mean, we were afraid that, you know, the first couple batches we may just have to, you know, dump because it's just not good enough. Because the last thing we want to do is you know, put a beer in front of people that isn't our best offering. You know, we want a reputation to precede us, and so, and make sure that we don't serve stuff that's you know, not fit for human consumption, so to speak. So yeah, so that's the first one. It's just Schwartz beer. The second beer that we have is Helles, and it is we've thinned it out a little bit in terms of alcohol and calories. We're trying to do a little bit lighter offering. We're right on the bike path here, and there's a lot of people that are really interested and concerned about fitness and well-being. So we've got this Helles that we've developed that's 99 calories, and it's, like I said, it'll be our lightest offering in terms of alcohol. It comes in about 3.3%, and we're trying to develop a beer that's lighter but is not thin. And that's a little bit of a trick. I mean, there's still some flavor there, and it's you know, you take it for what it is. You know, it's the, you know you're not going to come in that and say this is the best IPA I've ever had, but it is definitely a beer that is very very crushable, very you know, lawnmower beerish, as somebody might say. And that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah Well, it's delicious, it's nice, and both beers are super clean. Yeah, the Helles is very crushable, very drinkable, but at the same time, it does have a fairly substantial body. And I think, Will, you said this isn't completely carbed up yet, so you know, once it reaches a little bit higher carbonation, it'll be even more satisfying, you know, with the mouthfeel. So yeah, I don't know why people wouldn't just drink a lot, you know, come in off the bike trail and just drink a lot of that. And not have to worry about too many calories or too much alcohol. And the first beer is super nice and clean and roasty. It is a subdued roastiness, as you said. You know, it's not a porter, but there is a nice foundation of roast malt character. But at the same time, it is super drinkable as well. So whose recipes are these?
These are Mark's recipes. Part of my involvement here is helping Mark get his recipes to like a production brewery level. It's all Mark's recipes.
So I mean, Will's definitely helped with the tweaking of the recipes to get him to 7 barrels. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
know, the foundation of a lot of these recipes is Jamil Zainashev's book. Was it Brewing Classic Styles, I think is what it was, that I've developed over the course of many years. But without Will is the missing piece in the puzzle for me to go to pro brewer status is I don't have the time with my day job to do the brewing, day-to-day brewing, and I don't have the experience running a system like we have back there, and I don't have the background or the education that, that Will has to scale these brews up and make them approachable for the masses, so to speak. So he definitely had some involvement in these recipes for sure.
So talk about the recipe. I mean, how does one, as a home brewer, approach this style of beer? What goes into it?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going back to that book. I just kind of started with that recipe, and then I just kind of tweaked it. You know, I had a fairly good background in what each ingredient brings to the beer, and I'm a big fan of making sure that if there is a malt or a hop in the beer, you have to know what it brings to the beer. If you're just throwing stuff in there, you may have a great beer, or you may have an awful beer. But you know, every ingredient in that Schwarz beer, from the Pilsner malt, the Munich malt, and is it Black Prinz is what we're doing?
Prinz is one of the keys to this one.
Yeah. They all bring a certain character to the beer that makes it the color and the flavors that we're looking for here. You know, we want the Munich in there to kind of give it a little bit more body than just a Pilsner malt. We want the Black Prinz in there to give it the color. So.
And keep the roastiness subdued.
Right. Mm.
Yeah.
And these are lagers?
Yes. Yep. So. They're both lagers. Yeah, we're primarily doing lagers. I mean, we're going to put in maybe a Hefeweizen, hopefully for opening. We'll have a Hefeweizen.
Might have an alt, you know, some other
alt beer.
A Kolsch. Yep.
Yeah. And yeah, Will brews a really, really good Kolsch, so we're definitely going to have that on tap at some point, maybe a seasonal in the spring, if nothing else. But primarily European lagers is what we're focusing on. We really want to introduce or... I don't want to say introduce. We want to expand people's palates when it comes to lagers. There's other folks in the area that do lagers, and they do them well. We just want to explore more of them. We want to do the Schwarz beer, the Vienna lagers, the Oktoberfest, you know, the Box, Doppelbach, Pilsner, Helles. You know, just explore the whole variety of lagers, because there's a lot of... I think some of the styles have kind of been forgotten, or they get the bad rap because they're associated with the domestic lagers, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And there is kind of a, or at least if you look at my Twitter feed occasionally, there is kind of an IPA backlash happening in some areas. Some people are kind of getting tired of IPAs, and you are seeing more Pilsners, and more lagers coming around that are craft Pilsners and craft lagers. And so I think that there is a, you know, there's definitely a niche in this area that you guys can fill, and there's a reason that lagers have been around so long and have been so popular for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your brewer's favorite beer, even if they're selling you IPA, your brewer's favorite beer is oftentimes a lager, an approachable lower alcohol lager. And yeah, hopefully people in this area will recognize a well-made premium caliber lager.
So what's your approach to lagering? I mean, there's, you know, you've got, I don't know if you guys have been reading, posts from like the Brewlosophy guys where they do, you know, tests where they've been brewing lager styles at ale temperatures and doing triangle tests, and people can't tell the difference and all that. And I've been a part of that. I've done some of those tastings. So I'm assuming that you guys stick to more of a traditional lagering schedule.
We've been going back and forth about this a little bit. We are, these lagers that you're tasting right now, and because also too we're trying to get open, these are a little bit younger, but we will we'll take more of a traditional approach. We'll give it more tank time, we'll give it plenty of lagering time. So we'll do the diacetyl rest, and there's guys that are out there now that are really pushing those timetables. And, you know, it kind of depends on who you ask. If you ask two brewers, you get five answers, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But, yeah, we're going to do a more traditional approach. You know, ours will be dozens of weeks. You know what I mean? It's not just going to be just a couple of weeks. And that's really where you find, like, some differences, in my opinion, in some of the good lagers versus the really good lagers. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, as good as the Schwarz beer is now, it's only going to be better 4 weeks from now or 8 weeks from now if we have any left in 8 weeks.
Yeah. Is that a challenge since you are a small small batch brewery, and you know, your production scheduling has got to be a little tricky.
Absolutely, and that's why we're kind of in negotiations to try to find some more tank space, because the longer we can lay these down, the better they'll be. I mean, Will has kind of a saying that we'll let the beers tell us when they're done, not the timetable tell us when we're done. You know, we're not going to worry about, well, that beer is taking up that real estate in that tank for 4 weeks. It's time to get it moved on. Is the beer ready or not? You know, and you know, it, like Will said, more traditional brewing temperatures. What are we 52 degrees is what we're fermenting a lot of these lagers at. Then we'll do diacetyl rest up to mid 60s, and then we're crash cooling them for literally weeks, you know, just above freezing to get them into lagering mode. So,
well, I judged a competition in Salt Lake City one time. I'm not a big beer judge, but one of the flights was Pilsners, and we went through three or four beers, and it was like, wow, these are really good. These are really good examples. And one of the judges at the table said, we really haven't had a diacetyl bomb yet. And the next next bottle that the steward opened, he opened it, and literally you could smell butterscotch or, you know, movie butter coming out of the so, yeah. So, yeah, you can tell it, especially in a style. It's got to be kind of intimidating in that these styles are very delicate and there's nowhere to hide. There's not a huge amount of hops that's loaded on top of these. So if something does go wrong, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there.
Yeah, that's very true. You got to let, I mean, just like we said, you got to let the beer tell you. You try to get the diacetyl to come out and, you know, just drink it up. Yeah. That's where the sensory training comes in. Mm. Constant sensory evaluation.
We have to drink a lot of beer here to make sure that what we bring to you is worthy. But, you know, it's great. I'm working with Will, we've had some beers that didn't turn out the way we wanted them to be. And as we went through, he and I have been homebrewing really over the last, year and a half on my system, kind of tweaking these recipes and getting them ready for the 7-barrel. There's a few that we had that were, there was a, one that had it was a diacetyl bomb. It really was. And we talked about it, and we warmed it up, didn't we?
And we went back to the books. We tried to learn our lesson
But there's a few tricks that he's taught me that you can to help, one, test for diacetyl, and then two, to get rid of diacetyl if you have a keg that has diacetyl in it. Mm. And it's just simply warming the keg up for a number of weeks. We can sometimes allow whatever yeast is still in that keg to work and get rid of that diacetyl.
There's yeast there that can be.
So if you do have a keg of homebrew at home that tastes like movie butter popcorn, it can be rescued.
It can, yes. If there's a little bit of yeast in there, you can give it the temperature, you can give it the time, and, you know, just lager it. Time will clean up a lot of that stuff for you automatically.
Well, so you're, as you said, you're entering into kind of a getting more crowded beer market here in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, as a beer consumer, I say the more the better. But so what's been your interaction with the other players in the market? Has everybody been welcoming, or has everybody been helpful in welcoming you into the area?
We're really entering into a brothership. I mean, it's just been phenomenal, the support that we've gotten from all the brewers in the area. They've been mentors, cheerleaders. They've just been fantastic. We've toured a lot of the breweries in the state, and all of them have been, you know, open arms welcoming us and you know, opening their back door and showing us whatever we want to see. Any questions we had to ask, they were answering them, and it was just fantastic. I don't think we've run into anybody in all the breweries that we've toured that were, you know, just, you know, jerks or not wanting to share their recipes. I think it's a very unique industry. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think many people really view us, or we view them as competition. We view them as more of a brotherhood, and it's been fantastic. It's a very unique thing for any industry for that to happen, and we're just super excited to be a part of it and add to it. Is what we're hoping to do. You know, I'm like you. I think the more breweries you have in an area, the more people that love beer are going to come to the area, And I think with the air that we have that's so beautiful and the outdoorsy, and I really see this area, you know, very much like the Front Range of the Rockies was, 10, 15 years ago. You know, that burgeoning beer industry is just coming on tap, and people are just excited about every new brewery that opens up.
So what are the long range plans? I mean, I'm sure you're occupied with just getting the furniture placed and the bar built and the tap lines run, and all that is probably occupying your brain. But in your business plan, whether it's down on paper or not, where do you want to be? Do you want to be a regional player? Do you want to stay small? What's in your mind?
Well, I mean, being a regional player, a whole different thing opens up. I mean, you're fighting for shelf space. You're fighting with the big boys. I don't know that I have a whole lot of interest in really becoming a regional brewer. I mean, much like we're going to let the beer dictate whether it's done or not, I think we'll let the consumer dictate whether we need to get larger or not, this is all I've ever wanted to do, is open up a brewery, have a tap room, have people come in. The nice thing about our space here is we can control the experience, which isn't a selfish thing. This is letting people know this is how the beer is supposed to be consumed in the environment that it's supposed to be consumed in. And we can control all the aspects of that to make it the best drinking experience that we think we can make it. Whereas if they're pulling something off a shelf maybe a six-pack of cans that's been sitting warm for 6 months, that's not going to be the best representative of our beer. So I don't know, maybe a second location just to get people in Fayetteville a little closer. I don't know. I mean, we've talked about so many things, Dan and I have, but being a regional brewer would be, that's a major investment in money. I mean, you're talking million-dollar canning lines, you're talking a larger system. And it's a very competitive market, and it's a market that is probably going to be shrinking here shortly. So,
well, Prairie Grove needs a brewery, so come on out. Yeah. Now, and you're not going to have food here, I'm assuming.
We'll have food trucks. We have a dedicated spot out there for a food truck. Big Sexy is going to be out there for who knows how long. Dara's been negotiating that, and I think they're going to be out there for at least through the spring. Komodo, which is a Asian fusion restaurant, is going to have a menu here that's going to be abbreviated, and they'll deliver if you call. So we're not going to prepare meals here, but there is food available to eat in the tap room.
And you're not in a location where you're out in the middle of an industrial park somewhere on the edge of town. You are in a position to where people can walk to restaurants, yeah, and vice versa from here.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I noticed more than anything in all my tours of breweries and dragging my kids and my wife and everybody else out to these places. It's always seemed like it was in an industrial part of town, and the tap room was just kind of an afterthought. It's like, oh yeah, we need to have some place so people can sample our beers. Not all of them, but a lot of them. That's kind of some seemed what it was. It was kind of seemed to me that that's what the way it was. So we wanted to have a more tap room focused building to so we could really showcase what we're doing in the back of the house.
And you're right here on this beautiful little pond. Is it too big to be a pond? Is it a lake or is it a pond?
I think they call it a giant pond. Yeah, it's a pond, and we're right on the Razorback Greenway here. So we get it's a great place to people watch. It's a great place to stop if you're on your bike. In fact, we had last week we were putting these patio posts in for our beer garden to enclose it. And a couple showed up, and they were disappointed to find out that we weren't open yet. Thanks, Google. We need to fix that. but they're like, this was going to be our destination. I'm like, keep it your destination. Yeah. We'll be open in a month.
No. Coupons. No, those are probably illegal.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun. I'm looking forward to coming up. And when is the official grand opening? When are you officially going to be opening the doors?
November 23rd. That's the Saturday before Thanksgiving, 11 a.m. We're going to be, we're going to be open every morning at 11 a.m. every day of the week, and then we'll be closing depending on the day, 9, 10 o'clock Friday and Saturday. We'll stay open until about 10, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll be probably closing at 9. But we're going to team up with Big Sexy on the weekends, especially as it warms up in the spring. Maybe do some, maybe open up a little earlier to do things like a brunch, something like that. Maybe some beer mimosas. I don't know. That doesn't fall into the Ryan Hines kebab.
I was going to say, I was going to bust you for that.
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
We're going to try to do some fun stuff too. I mean, we've got some things in the works that hopefully some events that'll be fun. Teaming up with some local nonprofits too to get some support there. We really want to be a steward of the community, be good for everybody here. I'm not doing this to make a ton of money. I'm just doing this to keep the doors open, keep people happy, and because it's fun. You know, beer is fun. If you're not doing beer fun, you're doing it wrong.
The world's most elaborate beer or man cave down here in the
exactly pretty yeah 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 exactly.
Any last words, Will?
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Good ones. Well, Mark, it's good to talk to you again, and we will be back.
Oh, that sounds great. Great. I appreciate it, and thank you for stopping by. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks again to Mark and Will. Once again, the official opening day is the Saturday before Thanksgiving, November 23rd. Looking forward to tasting what Mark and Will brew up at Natural State Beer Company. If you have brewing questions, hey, don't forget your disaster show stories. And if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. So until next time, until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.